Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, everybody, we decided to take this week off, so here's one of our classic episodes. Hope you enjoy. Okay, everybody, welcome to the All Too Real 2 podcast. I am your host, Michael E. Cullen II, and with me, as always, is...
Matthew Haas I.
Yes, the one.
It's a new thing I'm doing lately.
The only.
Yeah.
Matthew.
Well, it's not the only, actually. There's a guy who runs a construction business who's named Matthew Haas, and there's also a pastor from Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
That I know of.
Well, we're giving them some free advertisement right now.
I talked to them once on AOL way back in the day, anyway, when I was looking for people with my namesake. Anyway.
So today on our show, we're covering something a little different here. We're wanting to dive into common misconceptions that people have about, you know, history and religion and advertising and different things, you know, just... You
art.
Know, art and, you know, life in general.
Artsy fartsy general, yeah.
Yes. You know, I've known a lot of artists, and I don't think any of them fart.
Yeah.
I'm joking. So, okay, so, Matt, you chose 5 misconceptions, and I chose 5 misconceptions.
Yeah.
Do you want to start with yours?
Yeah, sure. The first one is that the people in the history world, I wouldn't call it common, I guess it's a common misconception among people, history buffs, but is that the word idiot comes from a Greek word, and that basically, was like a insulting word, you know, someone who's just like willfully ignorant or just someone who doesn't.
Yeah, like the modern interpretation of the word idiot, and like whether they're stupid or whatever.
It doesn't didn't actually mean that. It just meant someone that was not essentially not like a politician, someone who didn't work like in the actual political establishment. That's all it meant. And then it kind of went down the road, and then it meant someone who's not very knowledgeable about those kind of things, and then finally it became to be anyone that's just someone who's like, you're an idiot, you know. But it didn't originally, it just meant someone that didn't work directly in that field, like they were like a shopkeeper or whatever, but they weren't like a senator or someone in the establishment.
So basically, if you weren't in politics or in government or something like that, you were basically an idiot. Is that what,
like, anything at all? Like if you were a farmer, or like, I mean, anything. If you're a poet or a musician, you were an idiot because you weren't
part of that.
Yeah. And then later on, it was people who don't have, like, because there's people like me and you who study stuff, but we're not directly involved in it.
Yeah.
Those people are idiots too, because they didn't have like a job or career in that type of
thing. So like
in
this theory then, like, President Trump would not be an idiot.
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Unfortunately, and he would make the cut, and ancient Greece.
Because he's a president, he would have been...
He may have been called something else in ancient Greece, but...
Yeah.
But I don't think...
But he would not be called an idiot.
No, something may have happened to
which
him.
Which he is often called today, yeah. though. But yeah.
In today's vernacular, yeah.
So... So maybe if somebody does call him an idiot, we're just saying that he should be a private citizen and not the
yeah.
not in government.
Yeah, there. I
mean, that's all we're trying to say. We're not trying to call him stupid. We're just saying, yeah, maybe. Anyways, let's not get political.
Which is hard for me, but when we do this show, I'm very good at
keeping, yeah.
Holding my tongue. But I just quote directly.
Yeah, it's kind of weird when I see him holding his tongue. It's weird.
It's
I
hard.
Mean,
it's weird.
I mean, it's hard for him to talk. I don't get it.
I don't know how I do it.
Yeah.
I'll just quote directly from the Wikipedia for a second. It said, you know, an idiot was simply a private citizen as opposed to a government official. Later, the word came to mean any sort of non-expert or layman. Then someone uneducated or ignorant, and much later to mean stupid or mentally deficient. So it went through a long process of deterioration, basically.
So in a way, people... were stupid and misinterpreted the word idiot
yeah.
as meaning stupid.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean that.
So they were kind of ignorant and they.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I guess that's a great. That happens to a lot of words.
Mm-hmm.
People, they change the meaning to.
Oh, yeah.
Like the word literally describes what they're doing and then they change the meaning. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of words that change over time. I mean, it yeah. just depends. Yeah. And so, they'll mean something completely mm-hmm. different. You know.
Right. And I guess it kind of makes sense because, you know, you could sort of trace a sort of like elitism for how this word has changed meaning. Because if the word just originally meant someone who did not participate in civic life or who did not vote, and then it was simply a private citizen as opposed to a government official. So if the word changes meaning over time, then it almost suggests that that's kind of how they thought of those people, and then it just kind of slowly turned into
so that. It was a dumbing down of the word.
Yeah, but almost kind of means that they probably thought that they were kind of like ignorant and uneducated.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't say
basically
that.
Just trying to say the private citizen was like
stupid
in a way compared to like a senator or yeah. something. Yeah.
And then it officially became that the official yeah. word meant that, like, but probably many centuries later. But so that's my first one.
And so you got more here. What's your second one?
The second one is another hit. I was like on a history kick here. So
okay.
This was I didn't even know this was even a theory or whatever, but because I studied this history a lot, but I missed this one. But apparently it's commonly believed that the Library of Alexandria was destroyed by the Caliph Umar ibn al-Khattab, who was the second caliph of Islam, and that I guess it was believed that the Muslim army destroyed the Library of Alexandria in 641 AD. And it says a common misconception alleged that Caliph Umar ordered the destruction based on the reasoning, quote, "If those books are in agreement with the Quran, we have no need of them. And if these are opposed to the Quran, destroy them or its variation." And it says, this story did not appear in writing until hundreds of years after the alleged incident, most famously in the work of Bar Hebraeus in the 13th century. And contemporary accounts of the Arab invasion do not include any account of the library's destruction. Which is interesting because I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't know that people believe that.
To be completely honest, I had never even... I mean, I'd heard the word Library of Alexandria mm-hmm. before, but I had never done any kind of research on it. I mean, I'm pretty learned on a lot of things, but I didn't even know what it was.
Yeah, well, it was a famous library, I think, in Egypt, because Alexandria is still a city in Egypt. I think it's
mm-hmm.
that. And I never heard that, because to me... which was interesting, because to me, I study a lot of like history, especially like Arab history, Islamic history, and like that kind of part of the world in general. It was usually quite the opposite of what would happen. Whenever Muslim armies would conquer a place, they would actually preserve the knowledge.
Yeah.
And they would translate into Arabic, and then you know, the people would adopt Arabic language, and so then from then on it would kind of spread, because you know, like in Spain, for example, you know, they spoke whatever language was the original. I'm not sure what the original language was before Spanish, but they would speak that and Arabic, so then it would get translated into that language and both, and then so it kind of started, the knowledge was then kind of like spread all over the world. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was kind of surprised to hear that their theory that they would destroy a library.
Yeah, I mean, is that kind of like, I mean, that the just kind of on a tangent here, that Spanish thing, is that kind of like why some of some words in Spanish and some words in Arabic are very similar in pronunciation?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not necessarily spelled the same way, but they're similar sounding.
Yeah, because in like the, I think it was the late or the middle or beginning of the 800s, like so basically the 9th century, I forgot which dynasty. I think it was a Splinter dynasty end up conquering Spain. There's different accounts as to how it happened. Some accounts say that the people were very happy to be conquered, you know, which I'm not sure if that's true or not. But well, because there was a lot of bad stuff going on within the society at that time.
Oh, okay, so maybe they were kind of saved by the conquering in a way somehow.
There were some people that were kind of like at least glad to have, I guess, a little bit more better overlords. I don't know, but so it depends on what side you're on. But like, Arabic, you know, became like a prevalent language at that time. Like, and it was a lot of people were speaking it. I mean, there was actually a time where like Christian scholars were actually very upset that a lot of the Christian students wanted to learn Arabic so much and wanted to imitate how the Muslims dressed and ate, and you know, they're like, well, you know, they shouldn't be doing this, you know, they, you know, it's, yeah, like, what are they doing, you know? And so like, yeah, words like guitar is, you know, it comes from Arabic, which is, I think it's like guitarra. Don't quote me on that, but I think, yeah, it's very similar. There's words like ole actually comes from the word Allah.
Yeah, it's like, I can't,
so there's lots of words.
I can't remember where I saw it, but there was a video I saw a while back that came up like in my Facebook feed or something, where it was, they showed this like Mexican girl and this Arab girl. I mean, I think they were both like a Mexican American and an Arab American girl, and they both spoke, you know, English and their you know, heritage language, I guess you could call it. And they were given English words. And then both of them said that in their family's native tongue. And it was funny how almost all of the words that they said were very similar, just spelled differently, like maybe a K instead of a C or something, you know, different things like that, or, you know, just slightly different. It was just funny. I can't remember what words they used, but I saw it was probably like a year ago I saw this. But yeah, it was just kind of interesting. And I always thought that was kind of cool how people, I mean, because the thing is, if people just break things down, we're more alike than we are different.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's like that part of the world in general is interesting because like the city state of Malta, I'm not sure if Malta is a country or if it's just a city. That's kind of near, I think, near Spain or kind of around the area. And like it's, you know, almost entirely a Christian country.
Yeah.
You know, almost everyone there is Christian or maybe, or at least culturally, if not religiously. But most of the people there, they still call God Allah, even though most of them aren't even Muslim. So it's like, it's because that was,
well,
like,
I mean, the word Allah means God,
well,
right?
I know, but it's usually something you would
that's why it bothers me when people think that there's a different God in Islam than there is in Christianity, when it's just basically the same word.
It's, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, people could say, well, I disagree with, you know, this theology. That's not the same thing as then saying, well, it's a totally different personage or what, you know, whatever type of thing. Like, but yeah, so like, yeah, they would say, I'm trying to remember what words. I know guitar comes from Arabic. I know, I'm blanking on the Spanish stuff, but like in English though, we still have lots of words. Like candy comes from an Arabic word. Coffee comes from an Arabic word.
Yeah, I mean, it's
alcohol,
kind of,
alcohol is Arabic.
Yeah, there's a lot of things like, that influenced, you know. I mean, I think English has a lot of words in it that are from other languages.
Yeah,
anyways,
lots of languages,
yeah.
Yeah. Sheriff comes from Arabic, from Sharif, I think. And like I said, alcohol, because al means the, and kahal basically is like the inebriation. So basically, alcohol means the Cajal, which is the you know the substance that I think sugar. I'm kind of going on a weird tangent here.
Yeah, Malta, by the way, I just looked it up just because I was curious. Is known as the Republic of Malta.
Okay.
It is a southern European island country consisting of archipelago and consisting of an archipelago in the Mediterranean Sea.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess it's not that it's close to Spain.
Oh, it's 80 kilometers south of Italy. 284 kilometers east of Tunisia.
Okay.
Yeah. And 333 kilometers north of Libya.
Okay, so it's kind of like interesting, like it's really close to a lot of different places. That's cool. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that was the main misconceptions because, you know, say what you want about conquering armies. I mean, this is a part of history, unfortunately, where people conquer other people. But in the case of the Muslim armies, for the most part, they would actually preserve the knowledge and they would translate it into Arabic and or other, maybe Persian. Because there was a few Persian dynasties that were really huge during back in the day, and they would pretty much just learn and build upon that knowledge. You know, even stuff that they didn't really agree with, like because there was like some disagreements that some people would say, well, you know, they should burn the books that talk about like polytheism or different gods or whatever. Say no, we'll just keep those two, just read them. And
yeah, I mean,
there were some fundamentalist groups that did though burn like stuff or get rid of, you know, like knowledge or whatever, but those groups didn't last that long because spoiler alert, when you don't know things, you don't really tend to last very long.
And then you become an idiot.
We're starting to learn this now. Lack of knowledge isn't something to be proud of.
Yes. By both of these like misconceptions we've learned.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, you know, in the end you're just an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The new version of it.
Speaking of idiots, your next one is another misconception by idiots. I'm joking.
This one I've heard this one so many times since I was
a kid. Me too.
And I believed it for so long.
Me too.
I eventually went to research it a while back, but then I kind of forgot about it. But the idea that the Vikings discovered Iceland and they named it Iceland to deter other people from settling in there because they didn't want to live on a country of ice. Yeah, but it was really lush and green.
Yeah, I've always heard the thing is that they named Iceland and Greenland, yeah. Greenland, even though it was more icy or something.
But Greenland's got plenty of Greenland as well. Like if you see pictures of Greenland, there's plenty of Greenland.
Yeah.
And there's sheep, you know, being raised, and it's not like it's just full of
it's
ice.
Not like it's like Antarctica or something.
It's not, it's you can live, I mean, people live on Greenland, like for real. Like not just scientists, like there's, you know, like scientists, you know, are the only people that live in Iceland. Like there is no Icelandic community, but Greenland there is. There's a government. It's a small group. I think it's only like maybe 50,000 people who live in Greenland, you know, or maybe make 100,000. But
only scientists live in Iceland?
No.
In Antarctica. I think you said Iceland. I was confused for a second there. I was like,
No, Iceland's a pretty...
Which is kind of ironic because the one person I know that lives in Iceland is our friend Sean, who's a scientist. But anyways...
Iceland's a pretty established country, yeah. But Greenland's a little bit smaller. But yeah, Antarctica, I think, is only scientists. I don't really think there's like a government or country of Antarctica because there's just not really anything to do there. But I remember that double thing of like, oh well, they said Iceland was Iceland, and you know, Green, so that way they would trick the people into going to Greenland, and then they'd be like, oh no, it's full of ice. But like that still like assumes that just because it's full of ice, that means they're stuck there, that they can't move. Like once they touch the ice, they're just like stuck in place. Like, oh, those damn Vikings. But anyway, so
once you land on some land, you're not allowed to leave it. Didn't you know that?
Yeah.
Oh wait.
And this name I'm gonna completely butcher so badly, but it says Nadad and Harafna Vayoki Vilger Aursen. I know it's wrong. Both saw snow. I guess they were like explorers, probably. Both saw snow and ice on the island when they traveled there, giving the island its name. So that's why it's called Iceland. It had nothing to do with tricking people.
Yeah.
Plus, too, people they're gonna go there anyway. It's not like, oh, well, they say this place is Iceland. Don't go there. Like no one's going to ever find it, like, even by accident. Like, yeah.
I mean, I know we didn't have, you know, Google Maps or anything at the time, but still,
no,
you know, people.
You had
people,
a compass. You had maps. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But what I'm saying is people still would travel places and venture out and do exploring and whatnot.
Plus, you're not telling me there was not at least one Viking that got drunk at home and was like, yeah, we told them that it was full of Viking, and someone overhears it and they're like, yeah, they lied to us.
Yeah.
Those people.
They're idiots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're idiots. So that's all I got for that second one or whatever, third one. Third one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what's your fourth one that you had?
Fourth one is... And this misconception that Marie Antoinette said let them eat cake when she heard about people were, like, starving from, like, food shortage. And she, you know, said that kind of, like, disparagingly, like, so, like, well, let them eat cake then, you know, type of thing. That she never said that. She was an unpopular leader, and people used that for propaganda purposes to basically kind of end up leading to her, I think, execution. I think that was one of the things that ended up leading to her, I think, getting killed.
And make her look like an idiot?
Yeah.
I'm going to keep coming back
to this.
No, I'm sorry.
Good. I like that. I like that callback. But what really happened was the phrase, this is, again, quoting straight from the Wikipedia, it said the phrase was first published in Rousseau's Confessions when Marie was only 9 years old, and most scholars believe that Rousseau coined it himself, or that it was said by Maria Theresa, the wife of Louis XIV. I don't know. I'm not good at Roman numerals. I'm used to Arabic numerals, which is what we use.
I think that's 14.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, we use Arabic numerals for those who want to complain about certain things. We use Arabic numerals. So
yeah, get over it. That's the common numerals that we use every day. You know, the 1, 2, 3, 4 that you're common with.
Not the Romans that were forced to learn once in the third grade and then we forget about it, like I just did right now. But anyway, so
yes,
the wife of Louis the 14th, and even Rousseau or Maria Theresa did not use the exact words, but actually let them eat brioche, which is a rich type of bread. I didn't even say it in French because I know I'd mess it up, but
Brioche,
yeah, which is, you know, like a new popular thing you can get, like, at burgers with brioche, whatever, bread. How is it said, brioche?
I think it's brioche. I might be wrong, though. That's how I've heard it pronounced.
Like, you can get brioche burgers from, like, fancy, whatever. Anyway, I don't like that kind of bread. Anyway, so Maria Antoinette was an unpopular ruler. Therefore, people attribute the phrase, let them eat cake, to her, in keeping with her reputation as being hard-hearted and disconnected from her subjects. And which is weird, because there's actually a little bit even debate about that she was hard-hearted. Of course, that these could be like Marie Antoinette apologists, which I'm not sure why there would be still, like, 300 years later, like, defending her, like,
god damn it,
she was the nicest queen ever, you know, whatever. But no, there's actually been some.
I knew Marie Antoinette. You are no Marie Antoinette.
Exactly. But I guess there have been some, like, historians who actually have suggested that she actually wasn't that that cold, and that she actually was kind of cared a little bit about the.
She wasn't a cold-hearted snake.
No, but that there was so much propaganda, because this was, I think, right before the first revolution with the Paris Commune happened, which was, like, I think probably the world's first experiment, like, in communism, that only lasted like 3 weeks before the commune was overrun by the by the bourgeois. But anyways,
that was
a
good run.
But it was a good dry run, like Glenn from Superstores.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to get paid, just make sure you clock in. A good dry run. Oh, I didn't know. No one told me. Kelly, sweet Kelly. Anyway, so. And but yeah, so there's that, and I guess you want me to do the last one?
Yeah, let's do your last one, and then I'll move on to my five that I've got here.
Okay. This one I just learned last night, because I had accepted this misconception forever, but that, again, this is a straight quote from the Wikipedia. Immigrants' last names were not Americanized voluntarily, mistakenly, or otherwise upon arrival at Ellis Island. Officials there kept no records other than checking ship manifests created at the point of origin, and there was simply no paperwork which would have created such an effect, let alone any law. At the time in New York, anyone could change the spelling of their name simply by using that new spelling. These names are often referred to as an Ellis Island special. So basically,
yeah,
the idea that, oh, they couldn't spell that name, so they just wrote it down, whatever they way they...
Well, I think, you know, I mean, a lot of it, I think basically what happened was these people didn't want people to associate them with their native land or
right.
whatever, so they changed their names.
They
I mean,
probably did it themselves, yeah.
I'm not 100% sure because I haven't had my genealogy done, but I'm pretty sure my last name, McCullen, was originally O'Cullen.
Right.
And the O got dropped when they came to the States because it's just easier to say Cullen than O'Cullen.
Well, plus, too, they there was didn't lots of prejudice against Irish.
Yeah, there was a lot of Irish prejudice, and there was, like, yeah. a lot of Italian prejudice at the time.
Right.
And, different prejudice for every country that came in.
Well, like my family on the Polish side, which was named Majewski, actually was what used to be Maciuski.
Yeah.
And I think it was even spelled Majewski.
And so they wanted to.
Yeah, I think they might have wanted to
remove any kind of Jewish connotations or something.
I don't think the name even has anything to do with that.
Yeah, but
letters,
maybe they were.
Yeah, it may have been.
And
yeah.
I mean, who knows? And I mean, there's also like it's in plus a lot of times they just want them kind of like there were people too that would just they'd have some really long foreign name and they're just like, okay, now I'm Smith,
right.
or Jones or something like that. They would just come up with a generic short name
right.
or if their name was like their name could be, like they'd keep the original mm-hmm. first letter of it, but then just shorten it
right.
to something, like I know a lot of names like Moore and other things like that originally were like, different names on top of those and stuff. I don't know. I mean, I know because like on my mom's side, they didn't change the last name because it was Ozenbaugh, and there's pretty sure that's the German name is how it came over from Germany.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now if you have that information and all you need now is my as well as Matt's, all you need now is our social security numbers and stuff like that. And you can I'm not trying to give you any ideas here. If I find out any of our listeners.
No, don't you dare do it.
No. Anyways.
And plus, too, I was thinking that maybe some of these people didn't really know how to spell very well. Or
that's true.
Advice.
I mean,
they may have just tried to guess.
And they might not know how to spell their names.
Right.
I mean, it could be like, a long name. Like what was your
Maciuski.
I mean, they might not have known how to spell that.
Right.
So it was just a guess and how they spelled it. And then it became, what it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and same thing with, even with O'Cullen, it could have been too, that they're just like, cause O'Cullen just means of Cullen. And
right.
that was like the land my family was from or something. There is a area called Cullen in
right.
Ireland.
Also an Irish, mythological character named Cú Chulainn.
Yeah.
Who was, I'm not sure if it's spelled the same way or not, but he was like a god or a warrior type person,
And as I did some research on the last name Cullen, which we're just going off on a tangent here, but I found out that my ancestors may have came from Germany and made their way to Ireland.
Oh, the original one.
Yeah, the Gaelic people that came there were actually, a lot of the Gaelic people that settled in Ireland were originally from the area that is now Germany.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
Were. I mean,
and
English people were originally came from
Yeah, and Ireland's not too far from,
right.
And there are Cullens in Ireland, too. It's a pretty popular name, and I looked it up. The last name is pretty popular in England. I mean, it's most popular in the United States of all countries.
Right.
More so than Ireland.
Right. That's why they call it Anglo-Saxon, because Saxon is where Germany was.
And then somehow that lady that wrote the Twilight books decided to steal my last name.
Yeah, I know.
I don't understand that. I'm not a vampire.
But also, too, not just the last name, names.
Oh, yeah,
Edward.
Yeah, my great-grandfather was Edward Cullen.
That's weird.
And my grandfather was Emmett Cullen, which are both in those Twilight books.
That's very
strange. Stephanie Meyer, I don't know where she got it. If you're listening to this by any chance, Stephanie Meyer, please contact me, email me. My personal email address is mike@cullenpark.com. I'm pretty sure you know how to spell Cullen. And, there we go. Okay.
So that's all of my five.
Yeah, so the first one I had... it's a historical religious one sort of kind of thing. Okay, here we go. The historical Buddha was not obese, which, people have those chubby Buddhas or laughing Buddhas. That's a 10th century Chinese folk hero by the name of Budai, B B-U-D-A-I, I think that's how you pronounce, Chinese Buddhist culture, Budai came to be revered as an incarnation of Maitreya, M-A-I-T-R-E-Y-A.
Yeah,
Maitreya,
that's right.
Yeah. Who would become the Buddha to restore Buddhism after the teachings of the historical Buddha have been forgotten. So it's kind of like a future Buddha.
Yeah.
So it's not the way that the real Buddha looked. He was, I mean, probably skinny.
Yeah, I would say so.
Especially since he went on a lot of hunger strikes and other things too. So I'm just, yeah. So the laughing fat Buddha that people put in their dashboards and, you know, that aren't Buddhists at all and just decide to,
just decide it looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, and some of them are Buddhists, though, that do it, I guess.
Like Hamway, remember the restaurant Hamway's? Did you ever go there?
No, I never went there.
It was a restaurant. You know, they serve, you know, regular food or whatever. Like,
yeah.
They had all this Buddhist stuff, and they were serving meat. It's like, I'm pretty sure Buddhists are vegetarians. It was originally the original Buddha was, but
yeah.
He grew up Hindu, but whatever. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. That'd probably make me think twice about eating the meat if I came in there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of like when I was in the... One of the things that made me stop eating red meat as much as I used to, because I don't eat it that often. And was when I was in the line of a Burger King right next to a farm where there were cows grazing while I'm in the drive-thru.
That's so wrong.
I'm looking over at this cow mooing, and I'm like...
That's so sad.
Yeah, I'm going to have some chicken nuggets. And
of course, what if we saw a chicken farm now right across the street? God
then
damn
maybe
it.
I wouldn't eat chicken.
Then you get a fish and there's a pond there. Yeah. Like, God damn it.
I do admire vegetarians and vegans so much because I could never do that.
I tried it, but...
I
can usually go like 2 or 3 days without eating meat. And then I've never been able to go like a whole week.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. I've tried. Maybe I'll get there someday.
Yeah, I can try. I did it for like a month or a month and a half once. But
I've never gone.
Yeah, but they say things can become a habit after 20 some days, but I still it didn't.
Well, they can, but you also have
you can break them.
You have to find good replacements too. You can't just abstain and then have nothing to.
And this was like about 15 years ago too, and there still wasn't. I mean, there's a lot better food now.
But it's kind of like, let's say if you're used to eating like, you know, 20 or 30 main dishes that have meat in it.
Yeah.
And then you know how to make 2 vegetarian dishes. Then eventually, you're gonna get
tired of those two.
You know
dishes.
What I mean? So you'd have to get
creative,
get more replacement. I don't know what the word is, but yeah, I know what you're saying. But yeah, I think I've actually been to a Burger King. I'm not sure if it's the same one. Is it Michigan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to that one. That's like in, not Monroe. That's like in, Lambertville?
Yeah, I think it's like right over at, like, Temperance or Lambertville in Michigan.
I've been to
Michigan,
that same one.
And
I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, that's where I had it. I was, like, just sitting there, and I'm like, because this was, like, you know, this was maybe 20 years ago or something when this happened, and I'm just sitting there, and I was going to get a cheeseburger, and I'm looking over, and I'm like...
But sadly, Mike, it probably isn't even those cows that are being killed.
Oh, no, I know it's not.
Some factory farm.
Oh, sure.
Like, not these nice
no,
ones
it
that
is.
Live on this nice little farm.
It's not free-range cows by any means.
God damn it. It's like, at least, you know, use those. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Funny little tangent.
It's kind of like, you know, when you go to a seafood restaurant and you see the lobsters in the...
I've always felt so sorry for them.
I know.
I'd never order lobster ever.
I've never had lobster in my life. I don't eat seafood.
It's not even good.
Yeah, because I can't. Seafood makes me sick, so
really?
I can't really eat it. Anyways, okay. So my next my next one is another religious based one. In the book of Genesis, the forbidden fruit that is mentioned is never ever identified as an apple, but it often is portrayed that way by most people, and most people think it was an apple. A misconception that was this according to Wikipedia was widely depicted in Western art. The original Hebrew texts mention only tree and fruit. Early Latin translations used the word mali, which mali, I don't know, which can be taken to mean both evil and apple. In early Germanic languages, the word apple and its cognates usually meant simply fruit. So, you know, most fruit was called apple.
Huh.
Yeah, or something at the time is basically what it's saying. And German and French artists commonly depicted the fruit as an apple from the 12th century onwards. And John Milton's Areopagitica. Yeah, whatever that's called, from 1644, explicitly mentions the fruit as an apple. Jewish scholars have suggested that the fruit could have been a grape or a fig, a wheat, an apricot, or an etrog. I don't know what an etrog is. I've never heard that one before. But it's obviously a fruit of some sort.
You gotta think too. Apples, were they even really native to that part of the world?
I don't know, and I mean, I think it's like, you know, because like people, it's like I have to look this up sometime. We can discuss it in another podcast sometime. But like, why do we? I mean, is this from the, because it's from the tree of knowledge or whatever? Sometimes they say, you know, things, and is that why we give teachers apples?
Oh, that's in. Yeah, I don't know. That's actually really interesting.
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah, we'll have to research that and talk about it in a future episode.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do another misconceptions episode or just like, strange facts or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what that is. Yeah, I just find that interesting. It's always an apple in like movies and paintings and books and everything, you know. It's just kind of interesting. The next one, okay. Abner Doubleday did not invent baseball. Most people think he did. You know, and nor did it originate in Cooperstown, New York, where the Hall of Fame is now. And that's why it's there, because people thought baseball originated there. It is believed now that baseball evolved from other bat and ball games such as cricket and rounders. And it and first took its modern form in New York City. Not Cooperstown, New York, but New York City. I've watched several documentaries about baseball, including the Ken Burns like beautiful documentary. There's no real proof anywhere that Abner Doubleday even ever played baseball.
Huh.
So let alone invented it. It just became this whole like story about this the Civil War general who decided to create a game and it was basically to try to totally Americanize everything.
Right.
But it was a derivative of, you know, cricket and rounders, which are both British games.
I mean, it is
its own game, but it's like the same thing. It's kind of like in a way that, you know, jazz grew out of other music forms from like, you know, Africa and other places, and like, you know, in like slave, you know,
blues
and stuff like that. And it grew out of that, but it is truly its own art form. Baseball is its own sport. It's not like it's similar to cricket. It's similar to rounders, but they're separate games. I mean, it's kind of like how football and soccer are similar in certain ways, but they're different in other ways, or, you know, different things like that. They are their own sport. So it's not taking away the fact that it was invented in America and it is an American pastime.
Right.
I'm not trying to be all un-American or anything.
Yeah.
But
baseball.
Yeah. But you know, but the fact is, Abner Doubleday did not invent it.
But how did it become known? Like, how did he? Was he like the first baseball team owner or something?
Like I said, I don't think he even had anything to do with baseball.
So it just took one person and just said it was him, like, basically.
I'm not exactly it.
Maybe we can do another episode on that.
Yeah, we could do something on Abner Doubleday, but I mean, he was a United States officer in the Union Army, and it's like what it says here. It's like it's basically although Doubleday achieved minor fame as a competent combat general with experience in many important Civil War battles, he is more widely known as the supposed inventor of the game of baseball. In Eli Finney's cow pasture in Cooperstown, New York in 1839, supposedly. Basically, we can go into it more some other time, but there is no proof that he was even there, let alone invented the game.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just, it became like a, it became like a wives' tale sort of thing, like a story that was just told. It's kind of like Johnny Appleseed. He was a real guy, but the stories about Johnny Appleseed aren't necessarily the true stories of Johnny Appleseed.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, most people don't even know Johnny Appleseed was a real guy, but he was. So it's just, but it's kind of like in another way where this one, everybody knows that he was a real guy, but they're contributing things to him that didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just kind of interesting, but we can go more into that some other time. This next one, which is funny because I was watching a documentary the other day that stated the exact opposite of what this says and perpetuated this long-held belief that is not true. Okay, the common image of Santa Claus or Father Christmas as a jolly old man in red robes was not created by the Coca-Cola company. Even though I watched a documentary about Coca-Cola the other day that told me it was. It was created as an advertising gimmick. They used him as an advertising gimmick. I can't say gimmick.
Woo. Yeah,
gimmick. Anyways, despite being historically represented with different characteristics and different colors of robes, Santa Claus had already been taken in his modern popular culture, already taken his modern form in popular culture and seen extensive use in other companies' advertisements and other mass media at the time. Coca-Cola began using his image in the 1930s. Prior to that, he was already used for years in the red and white outfit, being a jolly, you know, but like if you look at like Father Christmas and stuff, he was skinnier, but then they just rounded him up, make him more like a, you know, happy old elf, grandfatherly sort of character. Yeah. You know, that's what they did.
And that makes sense because, yeah, you know, back then, being a bigger person, you know, usually meant that you know, had lived a pretty comfortable life.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays, obesity is usually caused by different...
And jolliness was always pretty much linked to being well-fed and,
right.
You know.
Right. So you figure, this person seems like he's got a good life, he's got food, he's got, you know, I mean, hey, we should have a guy like that, you know,
yeah,
give us presents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he seems like he's has enough as it is, he can spare some.
And we can go into this more sometime. Maybe we'll do a Christmas episode where
we talk about
different Christmas things and stuff like that around December of one of these years.
One of these years.
Anyways.
We're going a long haul on this podcast.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long
haul. So stay tuned. In 2024, we're going to do an episode about Christmas. Wait, no.
If we're still alive. We're still alive. And the world hasn't turned into like a Shannara type, you know, scenario. Where,
yes.
Where AL. Yeah.
But we'll still be podcasting regardless.
We will be.
Anyways, my last common misconception that I have here, sorry folks, was that Thomas Edison did not invent the light bulb.
Ooh, shots fired.
Yes. I know everybody wants to think, and this is another one of these, like, oh, it was an American inventor who invented the light bulb. Thomas Edison really didn't invent
Thomas Edison.
Yeah, he screwed over Tesla. He screwed over a bunch of Westinghouse. He screwed over a bunch of people and stole their inventions. And he basically ran his factory. Basically, Andy Warhol based his factory of painters who he had people paint all of his paintings for him on the idea of Edison's factory.
Yeah.
So basically, anybody that created something within this factory, Edison took credit for. However, this invention was not made in America. He did, however, though, we'll give him credit, develop, whether he did it himself or used one of his stooges to do it, the first practical light bulb in 1880, employing a carbonized bamboo filament. But shortly prior to that, Joseph Swan invented an even more efficient light bulb in 18. Who had invented this prior to that in the 1870s, but then went on into 1881 and improved on Edison's design, basically, and created a more efficient one using cellulose filament. And, So Joseph Swan, I believe, was, I could be wrong here, I'm going to look him up really quick. Yes, Joseph Swan was British. So, yeah. Oops. And yeah, and he's known for the incandescent light bulb, which he invented, and also the photographic process, too. So, basically photographs and...
Oh, wow.
Yes, he... Yeah, and... basically, he went and worked with... he worked with Edison in what is considered to be independent lines of inquiry. Swan's incandescent electric lamp was developed at the same time as Thomas Edison's, was working on an same time as he was working on his incandescent lamp. With Swan's first successful lamp and Edison's lamp both patented in 1879, Edison's goal in developing his lamp was for it to be used as one part of a much larger system, a long life resistant lamp that could be connected in parallel to work economically with the large scale electric lighting utility he was creating. This is all from Wikipedia, by the way. Swan's original lamp design, which with its low resistance, the lamp can only be used in a series, in series, and short lifespan, was not suited for such an application. So then they actually joined forces and developed what is probably now the modern day light bulb that we knew growing up. But now we have different kinds of light bulbs because we have LED and compact fluorescent light bulbs and stuff. So yeah, but basically we owe Swan, not Edison. So maybe we should be paying our Swan bill instead of our Edison bill.
Yeah.
Anyways, but no, but I mean, whatever. So that's that story, and that was were my five, and those were your five, and yeah, go ahead.
Well, I thought of another one.
Yeah, go ahead.
As I was doing one of mine.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it okay if I do it?
Yeah, fine.
All right. Well, to video game fans, it's a common belief that the American NES game Super Mario Brothers Part 2 is based off of a Japanese game called Doki Doki Panic.
Yes.
Which it is. But this gets really strange. They released Super Mario Brothers 2 in Japan shortly after the first one, like a year later. And it was pretty much just like the first game, but a lot harder. So the people that were doing like the marketing in America said, well, that's not going to fly here in the States. It's too similar to the first game, and it's just extra hard. No one's going to really want to buy that. So we'll have to come up with a different thing. So at that time, so after they made the second one in Japan, people were kind of, the guy who was in charge of that was kind of just doing some ideas, coming up with concepts, and he pretty much came up with a concept that was very, very close to Doki Doki Panic. And he was just kind of fooling around. But then the person who made Doki Doki Panic basically got that idea from him and then made Doki Doki Panic. And then from there, they based that on Super. So in a way, Doki Doki Panic is actually sort of inspired by like a very, I'm talking like a very basic prototype. I'm not even saying like, I don't even think the guy even built like a level yet. So it wasn't like Doki Doki, it wasn't like he already come up with a game and then Doki Doki Panic came out. It was a very basic thing, but I don't remember the names of these guys or whatever. So I'm kind of just spitballing here. But so in a way,
folks, make sure you read about it and find out for yourself, because reading is fun.
Reading is fun, and I'm trying to remember. So basically, yeah. So in a way, I try to follow this train of logic here. Super Mario Brothers 2, the American version, is based off of Doki Doki Panic, a Japanese game. But the Japanese game Doki Doki Panic was somewhat inspired by a very, very early prototype of a American version of Mario 2 that was not really in the works yet. And then from there, they just decided, well, hey, we'll just take the game Doki Doki Panic and we'll just change the characters. We'll
replace all the character sprites and different characters.
And if you play, and I still want to buy a Super, a Famicom, like the Japanese Nintendo, but
yeah.
I don't really want to spend the money on it. But I kind of
you can get clones now that you can play.
Yeah,
things
but
on.
I like to have the original. I might get it one day. One day when this podcast takes off and we're making lots of money, I might treat myself to a family.
If you have one extra one laying around, yeah, you want to send it to Matt, you know, just contact us at alltoreal2@gmail.com.
Yeah. And then I'll play it and I'll review some games. And yeah. Maybe we'll do. But anyway, I would like to play Doki Doki Panic because although it is very similar to Super Mario Brothers 2 for America, there is a little bit of difference here. Like, some of it's good, some of it's bad. Like, for example, the waterfalls are like atrocious to watch in Doki Doki Panic. Like, give you a seizure.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, I've seen them there. They look like they're kind of like, you know, I don't know, seizure inducing.
Yeah, it's horrible. But, like, the music sometimes is a little bit better. The gameplay is pretty much the same. Like even some of the characters are the same, like a princess character. That's how they got the idea. They go, oh, well, we'll just have Princess Peach be, you know, one of the main characters of, you know, Super
I think
Mario
the characters in the other in the original were like a family.
It was a family, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I thought of that, and I kind of like, you know what, I always want to talk about Doki Doki Panic for some reason.
Maybe we'll do an episode on like the history of Nintendo or something.
Oh,
that'd
God,
be cool.
I would love that so much.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to start researching that, Matt, I would love to do that and talk to you about it.
Yeah.
The other one, another one that's a common misconception that popped in my head too, that I've read about several times and seen elsewhere, and many people have corrected this misconception over the years. But in case you've never heard it, most people think that Napoleon was short.
Yeah,
he was 5'2" in French inches at the time, which were different than our modern inches. He was probably about 5'7", so he was actually taller than me.
He's like an average.
I'm short,
height.
But you know, at the time it was average height because men did not grow. I mean, like, you know, he was at the low end probably of average height at the time, you know, but most French men were like about that size. But he never did himself any favors because he always rode a big horse and he always surrounded himself with tall soldiers.
So he was always shorter than them.
Yeah. I so guess. in the paintings and stuff of him, that's how he looked.
OK.
And so and plus to his enemies when coming at them, you know, he was shorter than everybody surrounding him. So it's kind of the opposite effect of like. Where, you know, in movies, people like Tom Cruise stand on crates and make themselves taller right. So they don't look shorter than their female co-stars.
God.
Anyways. That's
sad. That's sad.
Maybe they should cast Tom Cruise as Napoleon in a movie.
don't feed his ego anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure if Stanley Kubrick would have lived to make his Napoleon movie he was trying to make for years, he may have cast Tom Cruise because they did work together in Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, wow.
But anyways, if you have any common misconceptions you'd like to share with us or anything, you can feel free to email us at alltoreal2@gmail.com. Check us out on social media and all that good stuff. But for now, I think that's all we got. Is that true, Matt, or is that a misconception?
No, that's true.
Okay.
That one's right.
Okay. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.